You gotta lose the ice cubes in the drink, all right? You can drink all you want. The ice cubes clang around like steel balls in a trap.
You want to ask me if I give a shit?
Yeah, it's horrible. It's clank, clank.
No, please. Ask me if I give a shit.
Sound like I'm in a graveyard in Sleepy Hollow.
I said, ask me if I give a shit.
Sound like I'm hanging out in Sleepy Hollow with fucking One-Eyed Jack out there tinkling, dangling around.
Because I think you know, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, tinkling, dangling around.
Good. Now that we've established that, I don't give a shit.
All right, well, I'm going to call you on it, Tinkle Dangle. Yeah.
Great. Call it out.
Oh, what's his name? Jack Skellington. It sounds like Jack Skellington dancing across the stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Rancid Taco Movie Review Podcast. I'm Skylar Sanders, here with the Durin to my Durin, Mason Weir.
And tonight, we are reviewing episode 7 of The Rings of Power, titled The Eye.
The Eye. What do you think that's referring to?
I was going to ask you that. What do you think The Eye refers to?
I mean, on surface, I would think the Eye of Sauron. But
That's the famous eye that you would think, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's really no allusion to that, though.
Maybe the Eye of the Storm. But there's no storm in this either, really.
Yeah, but what storm? I don't know. That's interesting. I didn't even think about that. They've been so on point with their episode names. Like, they're very descriptive of the episode. And this one, I don't think as much. I don't think it is as much. I don't know. I don't understand what they're going for with that.
Apple of my eye? Apple of, apple of the eye?
There are some apples passed around in this one, so yeah, that could be true.
Quite a few apples in this episode. I don't know.
All right.
Anyway, Galadriel starts us off in this episode, and she wakes up to a red sky now, covered in ashes. Pretty cool visual scene, but I was expecting everyone to be dead when we left off the last episode.
Well, logistically, wouldn't the ash choke everyone out?
You would think so. It looks like everyone is dead. It's just her when she wakes up, and it's really quiet.
Well, she's absolutely covered in ash, and I'm like, isn't that in her lungs? Isn't she breathing that? Like, isn't she choking on that?
I don't think so. She's an elf. Elves are tough.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Agreed.
Let you finish clinking your ice around.
I was agreeing with you. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Anyway, everyone is seemingly dead, and even the horses are running around on fire, man. What? How much do you think they paid this stunt horse to get burned up? They run around.
I hope he got paid a lot, because if I was on fire running through that scene, I would have wanted a good paycheck. And I didn't stick around through the credits to see if any horses were harmed during the filming of this show. So
that looked real to me. If not, that was some good CGI. That horse looked like he was on fire.
Yeah. We could have had an Atreyu and what was the horse's name?
Artex.
Artemis.
Artex.
Yeah, Artex. We could have had an Atreyu Artex moment there.
Either way, Galadriel calls out for off-brand. She calls out for Elendil, but she doesn't find either one of them. She instead, unfortunately, finds Theo.
Yep. Yeah.
Wah, wah, wah.
Well, it's kind of cool because we get a little bit of a teaching moment here where she's like, are you hurt? And he's like, no. He's like, walk with me. And he's expressing his extreme anger towards everything. And she's being like, anger's bad. Don't be angry. Why are you so angry? It's like, bitch, you've been angry this whole fucking season.
Well, she gets to impart some elven wisdom now. That's what you've wanted this whole time.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, it's like the ancient adage of do as I say, not as I do sort of thing.
She's growing as a character. That's what, you know, you've been asking for her to be more like this, so now she's doing it this episode.
No, she's not being like this. She's telling him to be like this while she's being not like this.
Yeah, well, in this moment, she's being that yeah. that way. But yeah, this, overall, she's not.
In this moment, you sure? Yeah, yeah. In this moment, she's like, no, I'm a wise elf to impart wisdom. I just, Barry, don't be hating people. Hating is bad. And then she gets out of the fucking storm and is like, I'm going to kill them all.
Well, you're jumping the gun just a little bit, because as much as I would like to condense the Theo and Galadriel storyline into just that, they actually stretch it out pretty much the entire episode. It's Galadriel and Theo on the road.
Yeah.
But in case you were thinking maybe we could get off with Isildur being dead as opposed to Theo, nope. He's around too, and he wakes up from the volcanic eruption. Muriel, the queen, is nearby. They rescue the handsome friend. I figured out his name. It is Valindil.
Yes.
I had been calling him Autumno, and Autumno is his other friend, and guess what happened to him?
He did.
He did, yeah. They dig out Valindil, and Autumno's just laying down there by his feet, dead the whole time.
Yeah, they push up a burning piece of wood, and what's his name?
Valindil?
Valindil is just rolls over, eyes blank and up, you know, the classic dead stare.
Oh, no, Autumno is the one that's dead. Valindil's still alive. The handsome one is alive. The goofy one is dead.
Yeah, the goofy one is dead, and he just looks up, and they're so sad. And me, I was like, this guy seemed like a real doofus. I could have guessed he was going to die.
Yeah, he was doomed to die, and so it's not really an impactful death. What is an impactful death is the one that happens next, because we know this guy has a future in Middle Earth. What kind of MacGuffin is this? Whenever the barn is Isildur killed by a burning falling barn.
That's Isildur's bane.
Isildur's bane, the falling barn.
Isildur's bane is a burning barn. Yeah, you don't remember that from Tolkien? Yeah, Isildur's bane is a burning barn that falls on his head.
Well, as embarrassing as that is, we know that Isildur goes on to have an even more embarrassing death when he dies to like a handful of orcs in a stream somewhere face down.
The MacGuffins in this are just pissing me off.
Oh, this is a horrible MacGuffin, because anyone, you don't even have to have read any of the books to know that Isildur is still alive much later on. So we know he's not dead. Why give us this?
Yeah, literally this first season should be called The Rings of MacGuffin. It's one MacGuffin after the next.
This is a pretty bad one, I'll say that. Because they continue on with this throughout the rest of the episode. Is Isildur dead? Yes, he's dead. We all have to be sad that he's dead.
Well, it's constantly like a MacGuffin or a mystery box. Who's this? This could be Sauron, or it's just a regular person. Or this could be this person, or no, it's just that person. Or this person's probably dead. Oh, wait, you already know the history, and they're not dead. Yeah, I don't know. The MacGuffins are starting to get a bit annoying, and this is one of those moments where we probably got to put ourselves in check, because we know the story. Not everybody does. I hope you enjoyed the MacGuffins, average watcher, but we know Isildur can't be dead right here.
Yes, people that haven't seen Lord of the Rings but somehow are watching The Rings of Power, they might think Isildur is dead, and we don't want to spoil that, so you know, we just did.
We don't want to do it, but we feel it's our duty to spoil that.
And let's spoil something else here. Let's go to our friends the Harfoots. I feel like it's been a while since we saw them. They might not have even been in the last episode.
Yeah, I don't recall them from the last episode at all. But the Harfoots are, you know, hopping around, Harfooting around, doing their thing.
Oh, yeah, they're victims also of the volcanic eruption. Their trees that they've been getting apples from are completely burned up. They think that they can use Rocket Man as an opportunity to regrow the apples on the tree right away. And they all conspire to gather up his magic and heal the tree.
They selfishly ask for Rocket Man to use his powers to grow some apples. And Nori stands up and says, we couldn't possibly. Oh, wait, Nori's friend stands up and says, Poppy. Poppy, she says, we couldn't ask. To ask him to do that would be too much. And it's like, oh, okay, all right. Well, now it's a problem.
Little did they know, they didn't even need to ask him because he was already over there doing it anyway, talking to and healing the tree.
Well, I think Sadok says, all right, then I'll go ask him. So I think Sadok might ask him to do it, and he does try to do it for his part, and it would seem like he fails.
Yeah, not only does he fail, but he breaks a tree limb. It nearly kills some poor child hobbit, and so he is peril once again.
Yeah, poor guy's just accidentally killing hobbits left and right throughout this whole season.
Yeah, but you know what he is? Well, he's a rocket man.
I really should have looked up those lyrics by now.
No, we should have made up some lyrics by now.
Rocket man.
So let's go to Khazad Doom.
Khazad
Doom. I knew it was coming, so I just left you the opening to do it. Go ahead. Let it be known, I don't like that at all, but still, I'm going to continue to do it because it is kind of fun.
Yeah, that's a really good line here. Like, what other line could possibly signify that they were in Khazad Doom other than Khazad
Doom? Well, they are there, and Elrond is also there. He is begging King Durin, not Prince Durin, for the Mithril. He has an offer for the dwarves, and that offer is, he says, we'll furnish your house for like a lifetime supply of Mithril or something.
No, wood. It's wood for like 800 years or something like that.
For the Mithril. You know, the Mithril is ultimately valuable, and it's going to save their lives and existence.
Yeah, but he offers something. He says, I'll give you lumber for 800 years or 500 years or something like that. And in my head, I'm thinking, that's a pretty good deal, actually.
You thought it was a good deal, huh?
I thought it was a good deal.
I thought it was a bit of a lowball offer.
Nah, it seemed fair to me. I mean, they were going to trade for it. They were going to, 800 years of lumber, that's a lot of manpower they got.
Yeah, but when your life is on the line, like the elves' lives are in this portrayal of the Rings of Power here with the Mithril, you got to oversell. You know, you got to offer the house for that. You have to have
Mithril. That's two to three generations of elves that never have to go get wood or dwarves that never have to go get wood again.
Yeah, that's true. They probably don't want to leave the cave, so it'd be nice to stay under the mine. That's fair enough.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That's the selling point you're making if you're Elrond, that's for sure.
I mean, King Durin has all the negotiating power. He could have probably pushed it to 12 or 1400 years, but, you know.
Well, in the classic bad move, King Durin doesn't counteroffer. He just flat out says no and basically ends negotiations. But he doesn't even have the balls to say it to Elrond himself. He instead pulls Prince Durin to the side and then makes him go back out and tell Elrond.
Yeah, he's like, you're going to have to tell your friend that we're going to let them die.
But there's a little wild card entering into the fray here. And that is Disa, who now starts whispering some sweet nothings. Well, actually, sweet somethings. They're very, very important motivational tool here Disa's using.
Disa goes full-on fucking political overthrow. She wants to just take over. And I think at that point, she was just waiting for Prince Durin to be like, yeah, let's kill him.
You say that jokingly, but I wouldn't be ultimately surprised if there was some dwarven betrayal going on.
Betrayal. I doubt murder. Patricide. I don't think that's going to happen.
Not directly, but maybe something happens that leads to the death of.
Yeah, well, if that happens, it's going to be bad for Prince Durin, because he's going to have the guilt of that. But I think it's much more like we have to figure out how to circumvent him politically. So she sets up the foreground of like I'm against him, and she's a strong woman. Everybody needs a nice, strong, decent wife to push you into patricide.
Yes, she's strong arming him is what she's doing right here. She's not. I love how they seal it with a kiss too. How she gives him that kiss just to give that reward of sexuality if you. Do what I want politically.
Yeah.
You were probably pretty turned on by this, weren't you?
Ah, sexy, stout Disa. That's the note I wrote down.
Yeah, I know you love some Disa.
Yeah, I'd like to...
What would you like to do?
Like to mine her Mithril. I'd like to bury my. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going. All right, I gotta stop.
Yeah, just. But later on, to your point, later on, she does say seductively to her husband, "You and I are going to mine.
We are gonna dig in the mines of Moria."
Oh, that's right. Yeah, she says, "We are gonna dig.
We're gonna dig."
Oh yeah. But actually, I think Durin might have a bit of a bromance going on with Elrond because he's really into his friendship with Elrond.
Well, did we establish that Elrond is a twink elf, right?
No, we didn't establish that. I think we know that he's married and has children. And
oh, does he? Because he kind of really comes off as a very slight, small gay elf.
You think so? How so?
Well, his bromance with Durin, you know. Yeah.
I would believe that he has manipulated Durin into loving him more than he loves Durin in return.
Okay, all right.
You think he's a twink elf, huh?
Yeah, well, that's what he looks like to me. I don't know. I mean, I'm just judging him by his I'm just judging him superficially here.
Yeah. Actually, I think the character of Elrond, all things said and done, man, he's the best they've got in this whole series.
Yeah, I'm not as taken by him. My favorite is Rocket Man, I think, is his performance in Sadok. I like his a lot. And Adar. Those are my top three.
Rocket Man doesn't even say anything, really.
No, that's the best part, is that he's like his decaying teeth. He always looks so like childlike. He's like, oh, what do I do? Oh, oh. I just froze your hand. Sorry. Yeah, like I don't know. I just like the way he does his thing. And then, I don't know. Like Elrond to me, I don't think he's doing a bad job. I just, I get a little tired of the note he's playing. It's the same as Galadriel. I get a little tired of the notes they're on.
I think the reason I like the elves so much in this show, all the elves, even Celebrimbor, not really Gil-galad, but I like that they're all so individualistic. And most portrayals of elves that we've seen, like in The Hobbit with the Elven King and Lord of the Rings, there's Legolas and Elrond himself. All these other portrayals, they're all just so wooden and stiff and serious.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, I don't think he's doing a horrible job. I'm not saying he's doing a bad job. He's just not like, I'm not taken aback by it. But there was one line in this one where he stands up to Durin the King and he says, "I am Elrond, half elven." Like he refers to himself in third person, like he's the Rock or something.
Yeah, he says, "I'm no normal elf. No, I'm Elrond, half elven."
And he announces it like it's this big thing. Instead, to me, I'm like it's contrasted the character he's kind of set up, which is a little bit more humble and persuasive. This one, that delivery for me just seems like it just didn't seem consistent with the character he had set up.
So it's not going to be a deal between the elves and the dwarves. And Durin is going to have to break the news to Elrond and send him off on his way.
And he does. He breaks it. And I think he does it in a brotherly way. And Elrond is like, well, all right, I got to go back because I got to report back and let him know that he's not going to be king or even alive anymore.
I got to go report that we're all about to die.
Yeah, so, but hey, that's no problem. You know, you guys get back to doing whatever it is you're doing down here in Moria, and we'll just go fuck ourselves.
And so that's the way it looks like it's going to be, and he leaves. But after he leaves, Durin sees the poisoned elven leaf that's sitting on the table. He tosses the piece of mithril that he had given to Elrond earlier. He tosses it onto the table, and the leaf magically starts healing because it's proximity to the mithril.
Well, that's up to for debate, because I think the leaf starts healing because he scores what would be a touchdown in paper football with the mithril. Because the way he slides it on the table, and the half of it's hanging off the table, and anybody that's played paper football knows that's how you score a touchdown.
So because he scored, the leaf got better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, the leaf does get better, and Durin sees it, and this inspires him to yell out, "Elrond!" And he runs out and gathers Elrond back again.
Yeah.
that's where we will leave the dwarves and Elrond for now, is that Durin is going to gather him back up. And that's where we'll leave the podcast for now as we take a quick commercial break.
Kazan!
So we return now to the Southlands, or what remains of it, and the survivors of the Southlands. We've got Galadriel and Theo on the road wandering again. Here is where Theo says something along the lines of, I want to kill all the orcs because of a vengeance angle. And Galadriel is playing the part of the wise sage, where she says, no, you don't want to have that darkness on your head.
Yeah, meanwhile, she's slaughtering orcs left and right.
Yeah, well, she admits to killing a lot of them, but she says it's a hollow feeling to get that kind of revenge.
Yeah, okay, so maybe this is a good self-reflection moment for her.
Yeah, she also admits that the entire thing is her fault, too, here. So it is a self-reflection moment.
Yeah.
That's basically the gist of it, though, is she admits that Theo's angry. And we'll go to Elendil, who's also still alive. Is this the first time we've seen him in this episode, or was there another time already?
This is the only time I remember, the first time I remember seeing
him. He's looking for Isildur, his son. We already know, as the audience, that he's dead. Even though we also know that he's not dead.
We get a couple MacGuffins here with somebody that looks like Isildur and then turns around and...
It's not him. They do that a couple of times.
I know, I know. That's when I wrote down Lord of Rings of MacGuffin.
Rings of the MacGuffin.
It happens again in a few minutes with Theo.
Yes, Theoden.
Yeah, Theo, little Theoden.
And if you're wondering about Queen Muriel, she is blind now somehow. So she was fine when she was helping Valindil and Isildur, but now after the barn fell and killed Isildur, she is now blind.
Yeah, well, we don't exactly know she's blind. She's just kind of staring straight ahead, and we can assume that, and the curly-haired friend is dragging her around, and then Elendil gets all teary-eyed and asks about his son, and there's some vagary to the answers, and we don't get an exact reveal that she's blind yet, other than we can definitely tell she can't see.
Yeah, we don't exactly know that Isildur's still alive. We don't exactly know that she's blind, but we do know all of these things. So all this is just a big waste of time.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the Harfoots then, where Sadok is, in a nice way, giving Rocket Man his walking papers.
Yeah. He's like, there's a big tribe maybe over that way, and you know, you can go check and see if the stars are the ones you're looking for over there, but to be honest, I don't think it's going to happen. Good luck.
So I guess it was the tree branch falling on that baby. That's what pissed him off.
Well, that baby got in the way. The baby jumped right in the way. I mean,
I agree. Yeah. It was the baby's fault, but that's why the Harfoots are sending him away, right?
Yeah, yeah. So they're all about being like, oh, no, we've got to send him away, and he's the bad, he's the evil. He says something to the effect of he heard about mountains erupting and spitting fire, but only when it was a great coming of evil. And then they look up and stare at him and they're like, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. He did mention that.
Yeah, so he's like, now the reason everything bad that's happening to the Harfoots is probably because of the stranger.
Yep, so they're sending him away. Nori is pretty upset about it. She follows after him for a little bit to give him an apple. And it's a pretty somber scene as she hands him the apple and he wanders off into the wilderness. And then the scene after that, Nori is just saying things like, I'm a worthless piece of shit. I'll never amount to anything.
Yeah, I tried to help the world and the world just chewed me up and spit me out.
I'll always just be a Harfoot.
Yeah, I can really relate to her on this one, man. There's nothing like feeling sorry for yourself after the world just shits on you.
Yeah, she gave away the last apple and that's it. Rocket Man is out of her life.
Yeah.
And all of their lives.
Hey, and for all we know, it's a good thing. Maybe this guy is fucking evil. I mean, you put two and two together, only evil shit's been happening since he's been around. So maybe they're making a good decision here. I don't know.
Yeah, hit the bricks, Rocket Man. Well, speaking of mysterious disappearances, A lot of folk have complained that Celeborn is mysteriously missing from this story, the husband of Galadriel. But here, the showrunners actually give us a little hint of Celeborn.
Yeah, if we turns out, not only Finrod, right?
Yeah, her brother.
Not only has Finrod been killed by Sauron, but it turns out Celeborn, the famous elf that is her husband, was also supposedly killed by Sauron.
She says he rode to war and she never saw him again. She doesn't say that he's killed, but she assumes that he's killed.
She says it in direct response by, have you ever lost any family members or any kin close? Theo asks her if you've ever lost any kin. And she says, my brother and my husband.
She lost him, but she doesn't say he's dead.
We're assuming she thinks he's dead.
Yeah, she thinks he's dead, but she doesn't specifically say that. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, we as the Tolkien people know that.
Probably,
he's not dead.
We know he's not dead, but also as someone just watching the show.
If you're just watching the story, you'd have to really pay attention to pick that up. That she doesn't really say. I mean, she does say that she lost him and that she lost him to Sauron. So she's assuming he's dead. So why wouldn't we assume he's dead?
Well, normally, when they bring up a character's name in a TV show like this, you know they're going to come back around. And so I wouldn't be surprised at all if Celeborn is still alive and in a later episode of the show.
Yeah, I would not be surprised either.
What was surprising, though, was the maturity that Theo shows here, as he says that it's not Galadriel's fault that all this happened. It's actually his fault.
He was the keeper of the key.
Yeah, he was the keeper of the key. He was trifling around with that key, that evil key, all this time, and that's what caused the eruption.
Yeah, so when she says it's my fault, maybe she's wrong. Maybe it's actually is Theo's fault.
I was going to ask, whose fault is it more, Galadriel's or his fault?
In this specific moment, it's got to be Theo's fault. On a grander scale, maybe it's her fault.
Well, if Theo doesn't give up the key, all the Southlanders die at the hands of the orcs, right?
Yeah.
If Galadriel doesn't take those people to Numenor, they're still alive and the Southlanders still live. I don't know. I don't think either one of them could have avoided it. I think it's going to happen no matter what.
To me, I think it's the Numenorians' fault. Muriel and Al-Pharazôn... or just Farazan at this point, say they took too long to decide to go save him. If they showed up earlier and attacked the orcs and Adar before this whole thing set up, they could have had a better advantage. So they were late showing up.
Yeah, they could have properly hid the key.
Maybe it's Halbrand's fault for not opening. When he chases down Adar, he doesn't open the thing and look to see that it's the proper key.
Yeah, that's true, and you can blame Galadriel for that. All of them that passed it along. It
just
took Theo
gross,
to finally open it up.
Just gross negligence on everyone's fault.
So I guess they're bonding over blaming themselves here as the point of this scene, Theo and Galadriel. But Theo in particular is mentally in a very dark place, and physically too, I guess. It no longer is sunny. It no longer becomes sunny at all in the Southlands.
Yeah, it's not sunny in their world anymore. And he thinks that everybody he knows and loves is dead. And pretty much everyone he knows and loves is Arandir and Bronwyn.
Yeah, his mom and his stepdad and his
step-elf.
He loves his home, too, and that's obviously destroyed as well. So he's pretty upset, rightfully so.
Yeah, he's got a lot of anger. And at that age, that seems appropriate.
And you know the only thing that's better than hollow suspense? Real suspense.
Oh, yeah.
But we don't get that here. We get the hollow suspense instead. That's when some orcs show up and nearly catch Galadriel and Theo, but they don't.
Yeah, they have like keen smelling noses and they could smell humans from forever away. The guy smells something, but then he goes, what is it? What do you smell?
Ashes.
Ash everywhere. And it's like, then why did you walk over here and say that? We've been walking around for 30 fucking minutes. You could have said that everywhere you walked, you idiot.
The reason I brought this up is one of my favorite lines comes from here, and I want to say it now. The orc says to the other orc, we're wasting time. And I couldn't help but agree. Yes, that's exactly what they're doing, is wasting time right now.
Finally, they got the dialogue right.
They're doing exactly what they're saying. They're wasting time. Yeah. Theirs and mine.
And ours, yeah. I got just a little bit older watching this scene.
This episode, for sure. Yeah. So we'll go back to the mines now, where I'm going to just have to take a small victory lap. We get a little mystery solved here. This goes way back to episode 2. Mm-hmm. I said that Elrond intentionally lost the test of endurance. You argued that he did not, and here Elrond admits that he did intentionally lose the test of endurance to Durin.
Well, he forfeited. I mean, it's not even a question. He lost. He forfeited.
No, Durin said, "You let me win." And Elrond laughs and says, "Yes, yes. I just wanted to talk to you."
Yeah, well, but also, I believe there's some falsehoods going on here because he looked a little winded. He looked tired. Durin didn't look tired. So I think he is protecting and saving face, and he actually was going to lose the match. He just couldn't continue. And so now he has to, like, I mean, he's a smart, deceptive elf. We already.
Yeah, he's smart enough to fake acting tired as well.
Exactly. So
he was feigning being tired, and he was feigning the whole time.
He knew that if he set it up right, he could later say that, yeah, I was just faking. I could have gone on further and beat you, but. I mean, see, that's the whole problem with Durin, is Durin is much dumber than Elrond. And Elrond is manipulating him at every turn.
Durin says to Elrond, "You're the most dwarf-like elf I've ever met." And Elrond says, "You're the most elvish dwarf I've ever met."
Yeah, because that's what, why not say that, to manipulate him and get him on your side? I mean, Elrond's working him left and right mentally. I mean, Durin physically is he could probably murder Elrond, but
I agree. Actually, I think he has been working him a lot of the time, but it's pretty genuine in this scene, their friendship, I think.
Well, they're genuinely friends, but that doesn't mean he's not manipulating him.
So you didn't find anything about this scene touching when the two of them were drinking and talking about secrets and languages and dwarven languages and brotherhood?
No.
Not really. I did. I kind of liked it.
Yeah. Okay. But, I didn't really get that into it, I guess.
Well, the performance of Durin made it this whole, because he wells up at all the right times, and it's nice to see that side of a dwarf.
I actually do like Durin's performance throughout all of this back
and
half.
I liked Elrond too, because he was partially drunk. You could tell he had a little glint in his eye where he had a few drinks.
Now, the back half of the Elven story is not bad on Doran's part, but it's really, I think it's severely falling off as far as the stakes, the excitement, everything is just kind of like tapering off.
Yeah, the story itself is dwindling there, but the performances have been strong enough that it's still a good part of the show.
Well, it's sad because, I mean, if you think back to the first 3-4 episodes, me and you were all on board with the storyline, right?
Well, the dwarves in general, yeah.
The dwarves in the elven storyline was really an exciting part of it, and I think now it's just kind of like, it's just not.
You know what ruined it was the Mithril. As soon as they brought the Mithril into it, it ruined the storyline.
Yeah, it fucked with everything. It fucked with the lore, But that would be fine if there was more going on, I guess, to me, but that doesn't seem like it's moving anywhere.
What did you think about the fact that it was just Durin mining by himself? That's how they mine. They just go down to the basement and just dig with one axe. That's kind of cool, I thought, actually.
Yeah, that's all right.
Well, I always imagined the dwarves had a whole like mining party and operation, but in fact,
they should have. Yeah, they should have. You should have more dwarves down there mining, but.
Well, this was a secret operation, though. They didn't want everyone knowing about this. They were mm-hmm. hiding it from the king.
Yeah, that's true. So maybe they were just secretly trying to break into that one little window where they can view all the Mithril.
It makes Durin look like a real badass miner, too, because Elrond, I found this interesting as well. Elrond never swung the axe a single time.
He doesn't lift a finger to do anything except walk around with his robe in his hand like some Greek philosopher and pretend to be, you know.
Well, I thought about that. Why do you think that is? I think there's thematically a good reason for that. Imagine the fury that the dwarves would have if they knew an elf was down there actually doing the
mining. An elf was down there mining in their hole.
Yeah, it's one thing to be down there, but to actually be swinging the axe, they might kill Elrond for that if they found out about that.
Perhaps. Sure. That's an interesting theory.
I thought it was maybe something they were possibly alluding to. Otherwise, Elrond just looks like a lazy piece of shit. Like, get up and help your friend, you know? But he doesn't.
Yeah, he's just like a guest that shows up and is like, hey, do you think you should dig over there a little more?
You missed a spot.
You missed a spot right here. Yeah, look, there's some mithril right over here. Look, it's a big lightning bolt through the mountain. You can see it. Just follow it.
Yeah. Well, they do find some mithril eventually. They knock it through, and they find a chamber just absolutely flooded with it. But right as they uncover that pocket of mithril, King Durin, the father of Prince Durin, discovers them. He's pissed off, and he kicks Elrond out of the mountain.
Yeah, absolutely perfect timing on Dad's part here. Just shows up right as they burst through and discover all this mithril. And then instead of taking a look through and being like, holy shit, we do have a bunch of mithril down there, and it would be easy to mine, he goes, seize the elf, and you're no son of mine.
Oh, yeah, he was pissed about this whole thing. Well, he'd been saying not to do it. You can't directly disobey a king in this kind of world. So
yeah, that's true.
I actually side with the father when it comes to this fight between father and son Durins. The son Durin is eventually, we'll see, going to cause the downfall of the entire dwarven race.
Well, and the father tells him that too. He's like, this could cost us not just our entire, like, the elves have got their own battle fight, but this digging deep or whatever and mining in darkness and shadow and all that stuff could cost us all of Middle Earth, he says.
Yeah, and it's true. So we know from future tellings of different stories that the dwarves end up delving too deep into the dark. But we don't see it here just yet. It's coming up pretty soon, though.
Yeah,
not really looking forward to that, actually.
I think Prince Durin's delved too deep in Disa. He's got his head all wrapped in it, and he can't separate good from bad now. And his dad's trying to give him some good info, and his wife's, you know, going all evil queen on him.
I think the biggest problem lies in the fact that the elves don't just let themselves fade away. If they're going to fade away, just fade away.
Just fucking die, bro.
Yeah, if it's your time, it's your time. Like, what's going to happen? You just fade away and go.
The king makes an interesting speech to that effect. He says, greater minds set out the fate for the elves long before we ever came along. So he's talking about the Valinor or the Valar and the gods and stuff, I assume. So he's saying, hey, if the elves are meant to survive, the gods have set that out for them. The gods made this fucking world for them anyways, right? We're just the bastard redheaded stepchildren.
Yeah, let their fate play out the way it's meant to play.
Yeah, so he doesn't have a bad case.
No, and actually this next scene is a very long argument between the two of them, the father and son. For Durin the Younger's part, he does stand up to his father and say his beliefs. And I think as the audience, we're meant to side with him because he's saying things like, let me dig, let me grow as a person. Mm-hmm. If you want me to become this great mover of mountains, you've got to let me do my thing. But we've both already expressed, I think the king is right.
Yeah. And I mean, we do side with Durin, the Prince Durin, because yeah, he's trying to help his friend out and he's trying to do the right thing. He's trying to be a good person. So it makes sense, but I think King Doran's kind of got an edge here.
The big part of the scene, though, comes when he rips off the necklace of his son after the younger Durin says that he views Elrond as a brother from his own mother's womb.
Yeah.
Fired from her own womb, he says.
Yeah, yeah. That's the straw that breaks the camel's back, because Father Durin can't stand to hear that.
No, so he takes off his necklace, which indicates he's the prince, right?
I won't have any son of mine siding with a pointy-eared bastard. Knife ears. That's some knife-eared bastard.
Yep, so he takes off his necklace, thereby renouncing his future kingship.
Good, he doesn't deserve the kingship at this point.
So, back to the Harfoots. Nori awakens to the sound of Poppy, her friend, crunching some apples in her ear, and it turns out that Rocket Man's magic did actually work, and they now have a shitload of apples.
Yeah, and they're going to make apple sausage. I mean, applesauce.
Yeah, real cute until about 4 hours from now when they're all shitting their guts up in the woods.
Why do you think they're going to be shitting so much?
Apples are nothing but fiber. You can't just eat apples and apple-based products. You'll just be on the toilet all day.
No, apple's a superfruit. Apple a day keeps the doctor away.
One apple a day, yeah. Three apples a day gives you the shits all day.
Also, they clean your teeth. They're like a nature's toothbrush.
Yeah, I'm not denying any of these things, but you can't deny too many apples will give you the shits.
Well, let's face it, though. The stranger could use a few apples in his teeth.
Oh, yeah.
His teeth are pretty gnarly. Rotting out of his head.
Well, he's not the one with all the apples. It's the Harfoots right now that are loaded with apples.
Yeah.
And they're very happy about it because of the bounty of Rocket Man. Go ahead. Finish up.
Yeah, it's a fucking ice cube. So what?
It's really loud. It's not horribly loud. So
it's
loud.
It's not that loud. You're overreacting to my ice cube.
I hear it. I've got sensitive ears. I've got elf ears.
It adds to the scene.
It's great. We all love the sound of you gulping down after the tinkle, tinkle.
Some delicious apple juice I was tinkle, tinkling down there.
Oh, it's not all tinkles, tinkles, and apple juice, because Poppy, as she's down at the stream, spots an ominous-looking footprint. And it's not a wolf this time. It looks like it's a very big human footprint.
Yeah, I didn't understand this because the foot is huge.
Well, they're hobbits. Everything looks huge to them.
Well, their feet shouldn't look any bigger than any other people's feet, right? They have large feet.
They're big. They're giant size. They're the size of Rocket Man.
These feet look like giants' feet.
Well, they are giants. They belong to the wicked Eminem people that we saw in the last couple of episodes.
You better lose yourself in the music the moment the Morgoth is going to take you to Brave.
Cool. I like that. That's what this at least one of the three wizards definitely looks like.
Eminem. Yeah, female Eminem.
And we see the three of them now standing around. They pick up the basket of one of the Harfoots that floated downstream. So we know they're hot on the trail of Rocket Man.
Well, that's the thing is, Poppy, if she took her basket with her, it wouldn't have clued them off to where they were at. So she drops her bucket while she's getting water or something, and it floats downstream, and the evil M&M lady grabs it and picks it up and goes, oh, they're right up here. Okay, all right.
Yeah, so they know where the Harfoots are. The Harfoots know where they are. All right, let's try to just power through here.
All right.
Oh my god, I wish we were in the same room so I could strangle you out. I just want to kill you sometimes.
Okay, now it's just to piss you off, though.
Yeah, I know. I just want to slap you. That's all.
Well, here's the problem. I got a mason jar filled with it's a big ice cube. So, you know, like, it melts less quickly, but it rattles around more.
Why don't you get a straw? You should have a straw.
I'm not drinking a Negroni through a fucking straw, bro. What kind of animal are you? I'm a mixologist, man.
What's wrong with straws?
Shit doesn't, it's not, you don't drink liquor through a straw.
Do you not?
Not this. This is a booze-forward drink, not a citrusy drink. If it was a citrusy drink, maybe I could do a straw, but this is Campari, sweet vermouth, and gin.
Oh, well, if it's sweet vermouth and gin, then you definitely can't drink it through a straw.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad you finally saw it my way. If I handed a customer a straw with a Negroni, they'd fucking throw it back in my face.
Oh, I wouldn't. If I ordered it from you, I wouldn't.
Well, until you took a sip from the straw on the Negroni and realized how bad it was.
Well, you stir it up. That's what the straw's for, right?
Yeah. Well, no.
It just tastes bad all the time, even through a straw.
Yeah, it tastes bad all the time, straw or not straw.
Well, that's a good drink there.
It's a bitter aperitif drink. It primes your stomach. It primes your stomach for dinner.
Oh, okay. I'm glad it has a purpose, the bitter aperitif.
Yeah, you don't know anything about liquors. Don't get into this.
No, trust me, I don't. I know anything about liquors, and I'm not.
Do you know the difference? Do you know the difference between an aperitif and a digestif?
No, absolutely. I couldn't even spell aperitif.
Exactly. Aperitif comes before dinner. Digestif comes after dinner. You digest.
All right. Let's finish this thing off here, man.
All right. Hustle it up here.
So the Harfoots and the evil wizards are set for some kind of confrontation. And it takes place that night because the Harfoots are spying on the sorcerers and it becomes obvious that they're tracking Rocket Man. So Nori goes with the strategy of just flat out exposing herself and say, hey, he went that way.
Guess what? He went the wrong way. Oh, Nori is such a dumbass. Come on.
Yeah.
Just stay quiet, you know? Like, what's the advantage to jumping out and saying that as to just waiting for them to leave and then going to try to help him?
Yeah, I don't think there was. It was an impulsive move there by Nori.
Okay, yeah. I mean, if we ascribe it to just an impulsive move, then it makes a bit of sense. But it's just like, man, what a bad decision.
Yeah, bad choice. Because not only are these wizards evil, but apparently they can teleport too. And they teleport directly behind her, freaking her out. So then her father runs out. We wondered what this guy's name was. It's Largo.
Mm-hmm. And did you notice they grab an acorn off of her head too?
What, the sorcerers did?
Yeah. They, like, when they teleport behind her, they pick an acorn off of Nori's head.
I didn't pay attention to that. Why do you think they did that?
Well, that's a subtle detail. I think it's going to come into play, but...
So they're going to plant some evil seed with that acorn?
Maybe. I mean, they could taint the whole fucking Shire.
Maybe. Maybe they will. But we don't see that here. What we do see is the father of Nori holding up a torch. And instead of being frightened by this guy, the lead wizard instead grabs the flame and uses it somehow to magically set on fire all of the Harfoot carts.
Yeah, like, Nori's father's name?
Largo.
Largo. He's holding a torch up to her, and he says one of my favorite lines of the episode, but I won't spoil it. And she just grabs the torch, and it turns, like, completely goes out. And now she blows in her hand, and all that fire that was on the torch just springs up into every single cart that the Harfoots have.
What are these guys? What are these wizards?
I mean, I'm only assuming they're like Morgoth's, like a cult of Morgoth or something.
They're wizards, right? Like some kind of mages or wizards or sorcerers, some sort of, not quite Maiar, but maybe, I don't know.
I mean, they could be Maiar. They could be like a lesser Maiar. And they're, I mean, it would make sense that they're searching for Sauron, who is also a Maiar. And even if it's Gandalf or a wizard, the wizard's a Maiar. So it does make sense that they could be like a lesser Maiar. They obviously have some very otherworldly powers. So they're not elves. They're not human. They got to be Maiar. There's no other way around it. Like, you can't do this kind of sorcery just being a regular ass fucking elf, human / hobbit / whatever.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're otherworldly of some sort. But they're definitely too much of a match for the Harfoots, and they wreck them. They completely destroy their carts before disappearing out of sight.
Yeah.
So we'll leave them there, and we will go back to the Southlands where Beric, the horse, is very unruly.
Do we have to?
Yeah, we have to go back to the Southlands.
All right. Beric. The horse is just torn up about this whole thing.
Yeah.
The horse is like, man, I can't go back with you guys. I got a person to save.
What do you think of Elendil, the actor's performance here when he's pleading with the horse to come back?
It's all right. He does a good job. He's not bad.
He does do a really, really good job, I think. He does the best job in this episode of acting.
Yeah, for sure.
I hated his character's arc, though, the story they wrote for this character. Because ultimately, he blames the entire thing on Galadriel.
Well, I mean, is he wrong?
Yeah, that's like blaming the dealer because you lose a blackjack. Like, you went
to war.
That
fucking that dealer is the one that gave you the six, okay?
No, you went to war. You're a warrior. You know what could happen in war. You let your son come with you, and that's what happens. It's not Galadriel's fault.
All right, that's true. That's true. I mean, yeah, he is obviously... I mean, he hasn't had the time to properly deal with his son's and I'm air quoting here, his son's death.
Yeah, that's the main problem, is all this means nothing to us. Exactly. It could be very emotional, but it means nothing because we know he's alive.
It's pointless. It's like when a team scores a touchdown in football and you see the replay and you see it's obviously not a touchdown, but they keep reviewing it and you're just like, well, just hurry up and come out with the final sentence because we know it's not a touchdown.
Yeah, it's like if the game's already been played and you're watching the 4 a.m. replay and your team takes the lead and you think they might win, but the game's already been played out.
Unfortunately, you already know the final score. Yeah,
you know the final score. So it's a moving performance here by Alindell, but I don't give much credence to the story.
Just ignore the fucking ice cube, all right?
I'm trying to ignore it. It's just I hear it, and then I pause for a second. That's just what happens.
Yeah, Alindell's being a little bitch.
He is. But Valindil is there, too, and he kind of has a more pronounced role in this. I think he's going to be a major character in the upcoming seasons. The one that didn't die, the friend of his elders.
The curly-haired friend?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
What do you think about this guy? He's setting up to be a big character.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got a significant spot in the army. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how significant his role will be, but I think he's going to at least play a part for at least a couple more seasons. He's a prime character that they will kill off in season two or three.
Yeah. We went from not even wanting to name
him in the first episode. He has no value. He has no real value to us.
But he might be one of the people that turns out to be a Nazgul or a Witch King or the Mouth of Sauron.
No fucking way. No fucking way is that important. Like, they're going to kill him off because he's a character that we've built a small investment with. But they haven't. This show is not going to kill off anybody important.
You don't think we're going to see the rise of the Nazgul sometime in the series?
Well, we might. I mean, we might see the rise of the Nazgul.
So, who are those people going to be? Who are those kings going to be?
Kings, not the fucking curly-headed soldier.
I mean, you rise pretty quick in this world. We've already seen Isildur goes from stable boy to lead army charge guys. It wouldn't surprise me if this curly-haired fuck becomes a captain and a king.
All right. You got a fair point there, but I don't think he should.
I would like to see an origin story of the Witch King, even if it's this nerdy little dude.
Yeah, but I think it'll be a more significant character.
Maybe. Well, that's one mystery that I'm kind of looking forward to as we go to the next one.
Theo could be a Witch King. This guy doesn't qualify as Witch King yet.
I don't know. We'll see. We will see.
The Witch King of Angmar.
Anyway, did we mention that Beric now is released into the wild?
Who's Beric?
The horse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's off into the wild. So there he goes.
There he goes, off into the wild.
Him and Eddie Vedder Emil Hirsch.
That's
Phil Collins.
No, I was singing something else. Like a riddle rolling into night, like a riddle rolling into your eyes. It was another 90s band.
Look and see, I can feel it coming back
again. Yes, that's it.
Like a rolling, chasing the wind.
What's that band?
I think that's like Stone Temple Pilots or something. Or
yeah. Temple. Same thing. Same fucking voice. That song should have been playing as that horse ran off.
Yeah, it should have been.
Because I can feel it.
Live. It might have been Live, actually, that sang that song.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Live. That sounds right.
Eddie Vedder sang the soundtrack for Into the Wild, and Into the Wild, Beric the Horse goes here. So now let's move on past that distracting scene there. To Theo arriving finally to the medical tent that's set up in the remainder of the Southlands. Yes. There's more hollow suspense and pointless MacGuffins here as Theo thinks
Oh, no, really? Oh, oh, God.
It's my mother. Oh, no, wait. Actually, that's not my mother. Are you my mother? No, you're a dead person.
Yeah, the rings of MacGuffin. Here we go.
But finally, his mother does sneak up behind him and surprise him. So they hug. And not only that, but a Rondir the elf walks around the corner and he hugs Theo as well.
No one's dead. No one died.
No one died in this horrific volcanic eruption.
Everyone died except the people that should, you know, have died.
The one good thing I'll say about this scene is I did like the musical score they gave for the reunion of this trio here.
I didn't even notice it, but I will say that the music has paired really well with, like, if you're in a movie for the music and the visuals of it, man, this show is for you.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue. I love the music.
Story be damned. Let's get some good visuals and some great music accompanying it. Even the opening sequence is phenomenal.
Yep, agreed. But I also agree the story's bad, and we'll continue on with the bad part of the story here because Elendil, who's been the stern, calm, leading dad this entire time, is now completely anti-elf, and he wants to hustle the queen back to Numenor.
Yeah, the guy named Elf Friend is now anti-elf, so... Yep. Okay.
But Muriel, luckily for Galadriel, Muriel the Queen is not so anti-elf, despite being blind because of the actions of the elf.
She's pro-elf now.
She is, because she blindly gropes out. Surely, I'm not the only one that thought she was going to grope her breast when she reached her hand out there the first time.
God, if that would have added so much to the scene.
She doesn't, though. She reaches up and strokes her face instead.
Do not have pity on me, elf. Knife-eared prick.
Yeah, you knife-eared regent fuck. Don't have pity on me.
Don't have pity on me, you knife-eared fuck. I still got two legs, don't I? I still got two arms, don't I? I'm going to fight these goddamn orcs all the way to the fucking hell and back.
The problem here is I feel like they want to continue the fight, but they really are just mad at the volcano, right? Do they know how it erupted, or are they just pissed off because the volcano erupted?
Well, I mean, they shouldn't know how it erupted, really, other than the fact that the key was missing. They should know that. So maybe they could clue it all together, but not this quickly. But they're outmanned. They're out everything. Like, nothing really beneficial happened here. The whole thing, just big fucking waste of manpower and time. And she should just cut off Galadriel's head.
Yeah. Yeah, Galadriel really screwed them by convincing them to go there because they're going home limping and wounded. And Elendil especially is feeling the weight of that, and he cries in the corner as the queen promises to return to Middle-earth.
You take your battles when you can get them, and this battle is pretty much over, except for the queen has now decided it's not over. She's like, we're going back to Numenor. We're going to bring back a team of at least 12 more horses, maybe 13 or 14 more people. Two people at least have to watch the horses.
A couple more stable boys.
We obviously lost our best stable boy in Isildur. And we're going to come back and we're going to fight the good battle. We're going to fight for this plot of land in the middle of Earth that has no strategic purpose.
Well, speaking of fighting for a plot of land, and trying to come back, the Harfoots are trying to come back as well from the decimation of their carts. But morale is way down. Largo, the father Harfoot, gives a speech here. And man, this speech is lousy. This is one of the worst speeches and one of the worst instances of dialogue that we've seen in this entire series.
Would you take it easy? This show's really good.
Not this part of it's not. This dialogue is awful.
Dude, this show's really good, and you're just mad at it because it's not your Tolkien stuff you wanted.
How many times this season have we had to hear the Harfoots say, "We don't mine as well as the dwarves, and we don't fight as well as the elves, but we do have each other."
But we do also leave our friends behind on the path.
I mean, seriously, how many times have they mentioned, our legs may be short, but we're good at hiding, Like, all they do is just sit around and talk about their personality traits.
Bunch of fucking cowards, sounds like.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, no, I agree. Like, yeah.
Why, I hated this scene.
He's like, we do one thing better than everyone else. And then I failed to remember what that one thing he was.
The one thing he mentioned. Was stick together.
We stick together. Okay, oh, yeah. Okay. We stick together better than everyone else. It's like...
Not really. You're also petty and fighting all the time.
Yeah, you guys were literally just trying to leave people behind a scene ago.
Cut their wheels off so they couldn't even move. Not only just leave them behind, but just abandon them to death.
Oh, that right here at the end of the scene, that comes really heavy into play.
But for now, the speech does work. And not only does it work well enough to uplift the spirits of the Harfoots, but Nori commits to going off the trail to finding Rocket Man, who they'd sent away earlier. And slowly, the entire Harfoot troop decides to go with her, including Sadok and even the fiendish, what's her name, Malva? The really nasty one.
His, like, wife type thing?
Yeah, the one who's always saying the bad things.
That's what I'm talking about. She goes, no, you'll be going with them to help out. And he goes, Marva, I just wish for once in your life you weren't exactly right. And I'm in my head, I'm like, this is the bitch that just told them to fucking cut their wheels off and leave them behind.
Yeah, because they brought Rocket Man into the place. She said to leave them behind and kill them.
Literally one episode ago, she wanted to kill off her fellow hobbits. And this episode, he says, oh, you're always right.
You have to tread lightly with hobbit villains because you don't really see them. The closest you get to a hobbit villain is the Sackville Bagginses. And the most villainous thing they do is ransack Bilbo's house and stuff like that.
That's fine. Make her a villain, but stick with it, man. Jesus Christ. Like,
well,
if she's never insisted upon
leaving them. She just mentioned leaving them.
No, she said you should do what you should have done and cut their fucking wheels off and leave them behind. Not just leave them behind and let them fend for themselves, but stop their wheels from like desert them and sabotage them at the same time.
Oh, it's like, brutal. Don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying she didn't do it. She just said it. That's one thing to say it. You don't actually do it.
Yeah, no, she said that. And now he said she was never wrong about anything ever she's ever said in her entire hobbit fucking hairy foot life. And to me, I'm just like, this is ridiculous because last episode and even the episode before that, she was saved by the stranger, and then she wants to kill them, and now she's back on the other side, and she's the most flip-floppiest character you could ever think of. And
oh, they're all wishy-washy. This whole season that's been send Rocky Man away. No, bring him back. Use him. Yeah. No, send him away. No, use him.
Now Sadok's like, oh, for once I wish you were just not right about something. And it's like, well, pick your battle because you could have. She's not right about at least one of those things because she's advised for multiple sides.
Well, the end of it is, and the gist of it is they all agree they're all going to rescue Rocket Man and to help him before the evil wizards get there.
What's her name? Nori and Tori and Bori and.
No, they all go. Sadok said, he says, ah, who am I kidding? We're all going. So
no,
they all go.
No. Just Sadok. Sadok goes with Nori and her friend. What's her friend's name?
Poppy.
So it's Nori and Poppy and Sadok and one other. It's either Malva or the mother of Nori, Nori's stepmother.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to. We are way too far behind to sit and debate which Harfoots went to rescue Rocket
Man.
Yeah,
the whole fucking clan's not going.
Whatever. Like I said, I'm not going to debate it with you. They're all going to get Rocket Man, and that's where we're leaving the Harfoots tonight. So we'll go back to Arondir and Galadriel. They're talking with Bronwyn. Haven't seen Browin this whole episode.
Yeah.
Other than when she reunited with Theo. Let's mention, also, she was completely fucked up with injuries last week when she got shot through the chest.
Man, we could have killed her off, and that would have been a good character to get rid of.
Do you think it was the Alfarin seeds that healed her that well?
I guess.
I mean, she's up and moving like it's nothing.
Yeah, she ain't hurt.
Well, she reports among the remaining Southlanders. She reports to Galadriel that they intend on moving up near the river to a place called Pelagyr, which will later become, as we know, Gondor.
Yeah, so you said you did a little research on that. Tell us what you found there.
So they go up there and set up shop along with, eventually, the Faithful, and that's the people that don't turn dark in Numenor. They set up a base there as well, and that city will eventually become Gondor, which we know from Lord of the Rings.
And who founds Gondor?
Well, that's them. I guess you could say it's Bronwyn.
Yeah, but I think historically in Tolkien world, Isildur founds it. Is the founder of Gondor, right?
I think he's the first leader of Gondor, yeah. But Elendil, we were just talking about that, though. Elendil should have been there beforehand, and we know Isildur becomes the king, so that didn't exactly match up for us.
See, I'm under the impression, and I could be wrong, but I'm under the impression that Isildur is the founder of Gondor. So either we've got more to find out about, like, he comes back in this next season, or they've abandoned the actual storyline entirely.
Well, actually, looking deeper into Pelagyr, it's a city, but it's a port city. So Gondor is founded, like, on that same land, but I'm guessing it's a little bit further inland, and Pelagyr becomes the base port of Gondor. So, okay. Like, Gondor is a kingdom, Minas Tirith
so it's
is the
like,
city.
It's like the southern version of Osgiliath.
Yeah, it's like the Shire exists, but it's not called the Shire yet. It's like Gondor is existing, but it's not named Gondor until someone like Isildur goes there and founds it. So it's still within the confines of being Gondor, but it's not yet. It's Pelagyr.
Okay.
Either way, that's where the Southlanders are going, the ones that remain. Arondir is going to go with them, and Galadriel says she is going to go to face the judgment of Gil-galad.
Yeah, because she hasn't talked to Gil-galad since she jumped off the ship bound for Valinor.
Yeah, Galadriel got some splaining to do.
You got some splaining to do, Galadriel.
But before she explains herself, she's got to meet with one last person. So everyone's alive. The only person we have not seen is our pockmarked friend, Off-Brand. Mm. Is he alive or is he dead?
Well, he's got to be alive. They're not going to kill off an important character.
They're not going to kill off Off-Brand just yet, but it seems like they might, because when we see him here, he's bedridden with a horrific-looking wound right in his ribcage, like he got stabbed through or something.
Yeah, it looks like herpes.
Herpes, herpes of the chest, yeah.
That's on his lips. Never mind. That looks like a sword wound.
Did you notice his face was nasty again now?
Oh, yeah, he's all pale and all that jazz, and he says something to the effect of, better if I had died for me, I guess.
Yeah, poor Halbert.
Like, yeah, you look in pretty bad shape, bro. Just die.
He had a vindictive look on his face, too. I didn't feel any pity for Halbrand. I kind of just wanted him to die right there.
Well, he should have. I mean,
yeah, he's gravely wounded. So wounded, in fact, that Galadriel regurgitates the line from Lord of the Rings. He needs elvish medicine.
And she's going to carry him 6 days to Eregion. Is it Eregion or Lindon?
Yeah, Eregion.
Eregion. She's going to carry him 6 days past Lindon.
No, I think Lindon's closer to the coast. I don't think it's past Lindon.
I think she could have got to Lindon quicker.
It wouldn't make sense to do that, but that, I'll spot you that one because
it wouldn't
always have to make
sense. It really wouldn't. I agree 100%. It would not make sense to go past the 3-day journey to the 6-day journey. But
well, a lot of this doesn't make sense because he needs the elvish medicine, as she says. But then in the next scene, he's up and walking among the Southlanders and mounting a horse with a horrific rib injury. You could not ride a horse with this kind of rib. Like, he's got a hole in his ribs.
No, yeah. He should be just fucking, like, he should be, they need a cot. They need to carry him in a cot and pile him onto something and tie him to a horse maybe or something.
Yeah, it looks pretty bad, but I guess he's trying
to. No, he's fine, though. Yeah, he's fine.
He wants to keep appearances because he is the king in the Southlands.
Tis but a flesh wound.
Yep. So he's going to ride off with Galadriel to the kingdom. The Southlanders all weakly hail him, as they've been doing the last two episodes. And Theo goes to give Galadriel back her sword, but she says, "Keep it, soldier." So that whole threat of her teaching Theo, she says, "I might make a soldier out of you yet." He never does anything to impress her or do anything special this whole episode, but now she just gives him an elvish sword and calls him a soldier now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, that's a cool. Well, whatever. It's a moment of like she's giving him his thing, and he's now gonna become a soldier. Okay, whatever.
He did nothing to earn it.
Yeah, not really. I mean, yeah, he played kind of a big part in the bat. What did he?
No, he did nothing.
All right.
He gave away the sword hilt, and that's it.
It just goes to show you how easily valor can be won in this world. So, fuck, man.
Galadriel made Halbrand a king just for picking her up in the ocean. So, God, of course, she'll give this guy a sword.
God damn it. I want to like this. I want to like this fucking part. But yeah, you're right. You're right. I can't.
This episode is a real low point. We've said that over and over and over, but
this is
the lowest of the low points.
This comes after a fucking great episode of action and all this stuff, and like nothing
is happening. Just MacGuffins and big deaths and bullshit.
That's how I feel.
I don't have any hair. I'm pulling out.
Listen, I'm right on board with that. I'm pulling my fucking hair out too, bro. The only way I can get through this is fucking drinking with my
heavy drink. The only medicine is heavy drink.
The only medicine is heavy drink. Ah, oh, it's we dwarves that go swimming with hairy women.
All right.
Low man.
This is a low man point.
All right. Let's move on.
All right. So Disa here, she's more manipulative than ever, and she doubles down on the sinister nature to the point where they're almost setting up a coup against the elder Durin.
It does seem like she wants to murder. We already talked about this, so we can kind of go quickly through it, but it does seem like she's inspiring Doran the Prince to possibly overthrow Doran the King.
Yep. And Doran the King, for his part, is doing a little housekeeping. He picks up a stray leaf that's laying on the ground. We know
it's the elven leaf that's all poisoned by darkness.
Yes, we know it's the elven leaf from Elrond and his troubles, his door-to-door salesmanship pitch.
He's like, look at this leaf. You're going to leave us out to dry with this leaf while being dark with the dark veins and everything?
What if I told you could cure all these leaves for only 10 payments of oak wood?
With only 100 years of oak wood.
So that leaf gets thrown out of a mine shaft or down, like out this window. It floats down, hundreds, thousands of yards, it looks like. Mm-hmm. We're following the leaf as the camera. Mm-hmm. It settles in the dust.
Mm.
The dust starts shaking.
Very calmly, like a leaf would.
The leaf itself turns to flames. Oh. And then from within the dust, we see
Doran's Bane.
A Balrog.
And the Balrog looks exactly like the Peter Jackson Balrog. So
it is Doran's Bane, right? That's the same Balrog.
Yeah, well, I mean, if your interpretation is Peter Jackson's interpretation, yes, it's the exact same Balrog. I mean, it is the exact same Balrog.
It should be, yeah.
So they've matched it up, and they've given us a Balrog that looks exactly like Peter Jackson's Balrog.
You have a problem with it looking like that?
No, I actually like Peter Jackson's Balrog, but you can't say they're not biting off of Peter Jackson.
Well, the story is going to involve the Balrog coming out. I didn't really like the way they chose to introduce him, but it's kind of grown on me conceptually, because we've already talked about it is the elven leaf. So maybe that's a reason why that would awaken him. It's not just any leaf, you know.
Well, I mean, there's some theoretical debate as to some certain things about Balrogs. First of all, Balrogs are kind of hotly contested in the Tolkien world. And this Balrog unfolds its wings and then goes into a big fiery flame of exactly looking like the Balrog that attacked Gandalf on the bridge of Khazad Dûm.
It is the same Balrog. Of course it's going to look like it.
Well, I'm just saying, they definitely bit the whole style off him, but also...
What do you want him to do? Change it to look like someone else? He's the
Yeah, make your own fucking Balrog. Make
your own Balrog. It's the same Balrog. It's the same dude.
Well, make your own Balrog. And also, there's nothing... I mean, in the Tolkien text, it says Balrog's extends its shadows like a wing, right? There's no real evidence that Balrogs have wings.
Oh, okay. So I was hung up on this scene, but not for any of these reasons. I was more like, why did they awaken the Balrog? What was he doing? Just kind of like sleeping? Why did he roar out like that? Was he in hibernation? Is he going to come up? It didn't seem like it was very far down.
Well, like the goodness of the elf leaf awakened the Balrog. Okay, he's a light sleeper. Fine. But like, do your own Balrog, you know?
No, I don't agree with that at all. I think it's fine to copy that because it is the same Balrog. There's no evidence that Balrogs age like men or elves or something.
It's the same Balrog, but is it at the same show?
What do you mean, is it the same show?
It's not the same production.
The story is tying not directly the same into portrayal. That.
It's tying directly into Peter Jackson's version of the Balrog. It's literally verbatim the same exact looking Balrog that Peter Jackson portrayed.
Yeah, you keep saying that. The Balrog's name is Durin's Bane.
It's the
Balrog. It's
the same Balrog from the story.
Yeah, do you want him to grow a beard or something?
Yeah, give him a fucking beard if you want.
Jesus.
Stop fucking copying the Balrog of... just make a new Balrog. Come on, man.
No,
Balrogs
are open for interpretation.
No, that's not. Like, Peter Jackson's Balrog was different from the lore because it gave him wings. Balrogs don't actually have wings, I don't think.
They do in a lot of the drawings I've seen, the illustrations that are within the books themselves. So that's okay to give them.
It says it extends his shadows extended like wings.
It says that, but I also have illustrated books that have J.R.R. Tolkien's name on it that have winged Balrogs. So it's
J.R.R. Tolkien didn't draw the fucking Balrog. Okay, that's great.
But his estate sanctioned these artists.
That's fine. Give him wings then, but make a new fucking Balrog, man. Come on.
No, horrible point. Point for me.
No, not for you at all. Your fucking point is moot. This is verbatim the Durin's Bane from the Lord of the Rings, Peter Jackson's version.
Oh, my God. If you say
How do you not understand this?
How many times are you going to say that for me to say I understand?
Does Elrond look like Elrond from Lord of the Rings, Peter Jackson?
None of these are demons of Balrog's age.
Does Galadriel
Balrogs
look like Galadriel
have been around
from...
even longer than Galadriel? We've already seen that elves
it's
have
not
lifespans.
About, it's not about
Balrogs do
it's
not
about,
have
it's
a
the
lifespan.
Description. It's about artistic interpretation. Make your own fucking Balrog.
So then you
Don't
can bitch about them
Peter
changing
Jackson.
Everything. You could say, oh, they changed everything. They
I mean,
changed
if it
everything.
Has sucked, if it has sucked, sure, I would have bitched about it, but it would have been different.
We both dislike the scene. We'll leave it at that for very different reasons, apparently. But we both did dislike this scene, especially the first time I saw it. And that's almost the highlight of the episode. We still some fucking how have one last scene to get to.
God damn it.
And let's do it.
The rancid Taco's Bane.
Oh, the Taco's Bane is episode 7. My God.
Fuck you.
Yeah, goddamn you.
You mentioned my ice cube one more time.
I'm not going to mention it. I'll just sit and wait for you to slurp it up, you fuck. Finally.
Do you get what I'm saying, though?
Oh, my God. How could I not?
Do you get what I'm saying? Like, okay,
no, I don't agree with you at all.
I'm not asking if you agree with me, because obviously you're fine with Durin's Bane looking exactly like Peter Jackson's Durin Bane.
Yes, I'm fine with it.
Do you get what I'm saying?
I do. If he had a beard, it wouldn't bother me in the slightest. But the fact that he looks exactly the same, Does not bother me at all.
Okay, all right, that's fine. I'm just saying, do your own thing, that's all.
Well, one guy who is trying to do his own thing is Adar. And we'll finally finish this episode with he and his right-hand man, Waldrig. They celebrate taking over the Southlands, but they say, we can no longer call it the Southlands. What should we name it instead, Adar?
Adar! Adar! Adar!
Psych! They don't name it Adar. In fact, they don't name it anything. No. The text on the screen appears next to Mount Doom, and it says Southlands, X.
Crossed out.
Mordor. Now it becomes Mordor.
And he doesn't name it, and he doesn't say it, and...
The credits roll.
Fuck, man. I couldn't ask for a stupider episode. Yeah. Like, this is so bad.
Yeah, that was an insult to our intelligence, I think, there. It's like, in case you didn't know this was Mordor and we're setting it up, we're just going to put it up on the screen.
Now it's Mordor. Congratulations. It's officially named Mordor. We don't know why or how or where it's what for the what reason it's called Mordor, but it is called Mordor, and he doesn't even name it. It just pops up on the screen, and fuck.
But what are they setting up with this? We've already seen that Adar is not a friend of Sauron, and we know that Sauron ends up ruling Mordor, so it seems like there's going to be a civil war between evil factions, maybe.
Well, I mean, that there's a potential for that, for sure. There's a potential for, Adar could be Sauron, though I don't really feel like he is, with all the clues we've been given, but... Like, the Civil War could be just everybody turning on Adar, because Adar doesn't look like he's that strong in his position. I don't know, man.
They're chanting his name. They love Adar.
Yeah, like, the one human has to force it.
Waldrig, yeah. He's
Waldrig.
I love how he asks Adar what they're going to name it, and then he immediately starts a chant before Adar even has a chance to answer.
Yeah, like, he's priming him. Like, he's his hype man.
What if they took the text out of that? Is it as bad of a scene?
No, like, here's what they should have done. They should have done what they did, and then Adar says, we will call it Mordor, and then explained what Mordor means and why Mordor means what it means, or something like that. You know, fucking, come on. Come on, man!
They don't want Adar to be the one to name it Mordor. That's Sauron.
He just did without doing it.
No, he didn't say it. They just put it up there on the text for the audience. I don't think I think they used a back door by not letting him say it.
Ugh, well, then that's just as bad to me.
What if he comes out with a different name next episode where it's like, we shall call it Moriador?
Moriador. Yeah, that sounds about right.
And then later on, they'll have a war for it, and then Sauron will eventually win, and he'll say, from now on, we'll call it Mordor.
Okay, here, a quick Google search says, with Tolkien's, Mordor has two meanings, Black Land in Sindarin, and Land of Shadow in Quenya. So that's two languages that Tolkien has given you something to call it, right? Blackland in Sindarin, which is a made-up elven language that he made up, or Land of Shadow in Quenya, which is another elven language he made up. The root mor means dark or black, also appeared in Moria, which meant black pit, and Morgoth, the first dark lord. So let's call it the Land of the Shadow.
Well, no, we've already seen that Adar speaks Sindarin, so he would call it the other one.
So he'd call it the Blackland. So yeah, why not him be like, this is no longer the Southlands, it is now the Blacklands. And then they say Mordor or something like that.
That
would have
been
right?
Cool. I don't like that. And right? We already know he can speak Sindarin, so let it be so.
Let it be so, right?
But he would have named it in the Black Speech for the orcs. So they might have thought this through. You know, it would be a different word for them. It would be called like Valinor for the orcs.
Vorkukor. Something like that. Yeah, all right. I get that. But still, it's just like, just stop dropping the fucking ball.
Yeah, they dropped the ball on this. As we mentioned, this episode is over. And this is the low point of the entire series because after much goodwill they gave us after episode 6, they just dragged us down here.
This is the low point. Low point.
The low point of all is this one. I got to agree. This is all awful.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, we both railed on this. I told you last week I'm a full 180. I was back on board with the show, and now I'm back with you. That show sucks, man. It's going to be hard to recover from this with only one episode left to go.
But the problem is I'm being harder than I really feel because I still am on the side of the show. Like, I'm going to watch this show before I watch any other show. And I still want to know what's going on. So they do have me there. And maybe I'm just a victim because I'm such a big Tolkien fan. And I'm going to watch it no matter what they put up there. And even if I hate it, I'm going to watch it to hate it or I'm going to watch it to love it. So at this point, I really don't know. I really have no clue of why I keep watching it other than to berate it. And then there's very small instances of me liking it. There is one, like, Nori's friend. What, God damn it. If I have to ask her name one more time.
Poppy.
If Nori's friend Poppy becomes Samwise to Nori, like, that's a beautiful comparison. And who does Theo become? Does Theo become somebody important? And like Disa and Durin, do they like it? It still has things that make you want to watch it. But for God's sakes, man, just fucking try a little harder next season. Like, I don't know if it's cut and edited and finished or whatnot, but just try a little harder.
Oh, no, try a little harder next episode. Like, finish the landing, at least.
Yeah, you know? Or even next episode. I mean, the next episode better fucking nail it because I'm closed out.
Yeah, I hope they can pull us back in. But at this point, with the reveal of the Balrog and the reveal of Mordor, I was left with a big empty hole in my soul after this one.
Yeah, yeah. And it shouldn't be that way. I should want to watch this more. And I do. I want to watch every single episode that comes out because I'm so invested in this as a person. But it's not delivering on a lot of fronts. And fronts that could be fixed. Like, they spent so much money on this movie. They could have better dialogue. They could have better writers. They could have people like double checking the stuff that's going on and being like, hey, this doesn't make sense. Like, just the simple things that we're refuting or talking about. Like, somebody could be doing that. Either nobody's doing it or nobody cares. Like, they're just like, nah, we don't give a shit.
Well, we'll have to get into some of those things more specifically when we finally wrap up this show. It's hard to get these points in while we're reviewing the episode because it really makes things drag out. We're giving an ultimate summation of the show before it's quite done. But I do agree. They're missing a lot of things, and it's far, far from perfect. It's maybe far from good so far. Like, we'll have to wait and see. But let's hold that for just another week, though, is what I'm saying for that.
All right. We got 1 week left, last of season finale, and man, there better be a big old fucking awesome. They better fucking lay down a big old blue vein dick that I can just crawl right out of this hole with and just
what are you gonna do with the dick?
Crawl out of this hole that they've dug. All right, I want a big.
What's the dick? What's the dick have to do with this?
I don't know, but.
They better just give me a big fat.
I feel like I'm in a big hole that they fucked. I'm in a big fucking hobbit hole that they fucked a big hole in this earth, and I want to grab a hold of the big Amazon blue vein dick and crawl out of this hole and just look up and see the light of Valinor or the Valar or whatever it is. But like right now, I just feel like we're getting pounded by a big blue vein dick.
Yeah, it does feel that way. Hey. Did you have any favorite lines from this episode?
Let me check here. Trees don't talk. Some do.
Yeah, nice little reference to ants there.
Yeah, a little ant reference there. That's fun. It darkens the heart to call dark deeds good. Galadriel says that, and that's just a cool line. I like that line in general, like saying, yeah, I hope that person dies. That hurts your soul. You harm a hair on her foot, and I'll brain the lot of you. What's his name? The dad hobbit says that.
Largo.
Yeah. Oh, even after all this shit's happened and Galadriel comes up to pay respects to the queen goes, "We don't kneel in Numenor." And she goes, "You're not in Numenor, bitch." she can't humble herself even after that. And I wrote down, "No, I'm certain of it." Oh, yeah. No, this is my big theory. I got going. So Galadriel is just a contrarian.
Yeah, she wants to just argue all the time.
Anybody that says anything, she says the opposite and then argues it.
Yeah, when she says, "Do you think such and such will deliver?" And she says, "No, I don't think. I know.
I'm certain of it." Yeah, she's like, "No, I don't think so. I'm certain of it."
Yeah, Galadriel in these early stages, she is a contrarian.
Like, bitch, I just asked you a question if you think they would or they wouldn't, and then you made it seem like I said something stupid.
Yeah, just give me a flat-out answer.
Just give me an answer. Like, she's a contrarian. That's... I figured that out. Like, she's not actually a horrible person. She's just a contrarian. I think that's a character flaw of hers in the show. And she just, it doesn't matter what you tell her. Like, you could be like, "The sky is blue." And she's going to be like, "No, it's not.
Not right now, it's not.
It's hazel green right now."
Or whatever. We all know someone like that in real life. Yeah.
That's true. So that's realistic.
Did you have any more favorite lines?
That's it.
All right. Well, you had a lot more than me. I just had the two. One of them is from Durin the Prince when he says, "The greatest thing a dwarf can do is live up to the name of his father."
Very nice.
That was a good, nice, touching father to son there moment.
Yeah.
And then the other one is from the orcs when he says, "We're wasting time.
Smells like ash."
Yeah, so let's stop wasting time. Hail Morgoth.
Fucking hail Morgoth.
And I'm not even going to ask if you have anything else to say about episode 7. Please say you don't.
Nah, just hail your mother.
Hail to your mother as well. And next week, we will return for the big finale. And let's just hope that they can claw their way out of this.
Out of this blue veiny dickhole they've punctured. Into the center of Arda.
Yep. That'll be next week, the big climax. But will we be climaxing? We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we will see you next week for the finale of The Rings of Power.
Bye-bye, y'all.
All right. Back to this story. I just put a piece of gum in.
Thank God. Your breath was getting horrible.
Sorry. Still got that ice in there, I hear.
Yeah, I mean, it's melting, but not at the pace you would like.
All right, I'm going to spit the gum out. It's a bad choice.
Everyone loves movies, from Webster to Morocco. Who needs Rotten Tomatoes when you've got the Rancid Tacos?
This podcast is brought to you by West Virginia Pepperoni Rolls.